welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for July 20th, 2009, and on this week's episode, Ann Nicholson Weber interviews three local Chicago stage managers. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, and let's talk theater.
This is Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Ann Nicholson Weber. Our show today is on stage managers, a little understood, or at least little understood by me, aspect, but crucial to the production of a show. So I've invited three Chicago stage managers here to talk about this, what they do. David Castellanos, who is the production stage manager at Writers Theater. Patia Bartlett, who is currently stage managing Million Dollar Quartet and also works at Looking Glass and what's the other
and
one?
And Remy Bumpo.
And Remy Bumpo, right. And Erica Foster, who is stage managing at Lifeline, where she's been a fixture for 8 years or so. Thank you so much for coming. I feel that this show is kind of a debt of honor because a month or so back, I did an interview with three sound designers. And as they were talking, it was clear that I wasn't understanding some things they were explaining about running the show. And finally, I realized that I was incredibly ignorant and had no notion that it's the stage manager who, for instance, calls the sound cues in a show. And I felt that I needed to clear up the record for for others who might similarly not know exactly what the heck it is that a stage manager does. So, what does a stage manager do? Let's just get the basics of the job kind of out. Maybe, David, you could help with that?
I think what we do is everything that decision that's made that's artistic is pretty ethereal, and we turn it into the concrete. We are the one to take, they need a prop. So we take that information and we make that happen. That prop needs to be there the next day. That's how we turn a lot of discussion into actual concrete physical things.
A lot of discussion, I imagine.
A lot, yes.
That might stay discussion forever.
Forever, if it's not someone taking notes and committing to things, be turning into the physical objects.
That's a really great description. So, Padia, give us some examples of what you do before a show to start.
Well, when we start a week before the actors start, it's called pre-production, and on an equity contract, a stage manager is required to have 1 week of pre-production so that you can get all the paperwork in order and ready, schedules ready, costume fittings ready, all the things that have to come together to start, at least start your rehearsal process, contacting the actors and letting them know the times for your first rehearsal, contacting designers to be there for the first rehearsal to have a design presentation, the first reading, making sure that you have a meeting with the directors to talk about what their expectations are for rehearsal, both rehearsal process, tech, and further on after that, and just getting all your ducks in a row and making sure that you know all of the actors that you're dealing with, and lots of scheduling is the first week.
Well, no, the design process starts way before then, so you're saying that you do not have particularly a role in dealing with the designers.
Almost none.
Okay. Not with the design process, no.
So you come in with the actors. So then, Erica, maybe take it from whence we've gotten things scheduled, we've gotten through rehearsal, which I gather is mostly scheduling. What other jobs during the rehearsal period?
Well, you know, you take notes of everything that's happening and, you know, spur-of-the-moment ideas about needing a new prop or, oh, this set piece isn't going to work. You have to make sure that the designers know that what's happening in rehearsal, so that everyone's on the same page, so when it all does come together during tech, it's not, you know, some crazy idea that no one's ever heard of, because, you know, it's your job to make sure that everyone knows the crazy ideas.
Right.
Because a lot of times they work out wonderfully.
So once you get into rehearsal, then you are communicating with the designers as well as the actors.
We take notes, and then each night those notes are distributed and to via email, which is much easier than it ever used to be. And so, and we truly write down the minorest detail, the minorest thing, because it it's better that it's rejected than never heard of.
Right.
So there's no thing that we go, you know, an offside conversation of, gee, it'd be great if we had this thing that you just hear, you write it down and you send it along.
So give some examples. You're sitting in rehearsal, scribbling down notes. What are the kinds of things that you're writing in your, whatever you write on?
We have a prompt book. A stage manager puts together a prompt book, and in this book, there's everything between you have the script, you have your prop list that you've made in that pre-production week, and then you have your other information, actor information, and you have your blocking script where you take down the blocking, and each you have a category for each department that there is. Mm-hmm. There is you have props, and then you have lights, and you have costumes, and you have sets. You know, I just have a legal pad for rehearsals that I'm taking notes on, and then we transcribe it into a rehearsal report that we put all these notes about. You know, the director wanted a special light up left for that actor, and so you tell the lighting designer that so that as they're focusing and hanging their plot, they can make sure that there's a special there. Otherwise, you get to tech and there's nothing there for them.
Mm-hmm. So does the director kind of turn sideways over his or her shoulder and say, Padia, can you make a note, or do you just have to be...
It depends on the director.
Both. But you should, at the end of the night, go over all the notes you've taken. And some things are go, no, I don't want that at all. That shouldn't be in the notes.
Right.
But, yeah, we have to review everything each night.
Just with the director. So during rehearsal, you're taking all these notes. Then you go over it with the director, and then you essentially publish it, which is to say both you put it into the official rehearsal report, and then you start sending out emails to... Did you call it report? Rehearsal report?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's called the rehearsal report.
Sending out emails to the people who might be affected.
Mm-hmm. Well, you send one out. I do. You send one out to everyone. Costumes needs to know what props is up to and sets is doing. So they should all read everyone's notes at the same time and feel really on board with everything.
And even administrative people usually get the reports as well. The artistic director, or you send the notes also to the director and people in the office, staff people.
People with budgets who deal with the budgets.
Budgets and marketing all those things. They all need to know what's going on.
But now what about the actors? They wouldn't get the reports.
No, they don't get those.
No.
They never get notes.
So blocking, how is blocking... is there a language like for choreography that you?
It's a lot like shorthand, actually.
Every stage manager has their way of doing it.
And so it's not a uniform.
No, it's not a uniform thing. Although I think many stage managers learn from other stage managers. Mm-hmm. You see what someone else has done, and you're like, "Oh, I like that. Right. I'm going to use that." Or, "No, I don't like that. I have my own way that I really like." Right. And so
there's certain things that always mean X is always cross. You know, CS is center stage. So there's a lot of abbreviations going on that means to you. The hard part is if it doesn't mean anything to anyone else.
Right. Right. So then you have to convey that in a way that when the actor says, wait a minute, where do I enter? Where do I cross or whatever? Okay. So your production notebook has the blocking, has the, everything that has been said so far about lights and sound cues and so forth. Mm-hmm. And you're also kind of the contact for the actors, right?
Yes.
So what does that involve other than emails about the schedule? Erica, what else do you...
Well, you know, if an actor... I do a lot of shows that have fighting in them, so sometimes an actor may not want to tell the fight choreographer, you know, this is really hurting my knee or something, because they just don't want to stifle them and their choreography. So they'll come to me, and then it's my job to make sure that, you know, the actor's staying safe and we've got everything he needs, and that the fight choreographer knows, hey, you know, this is a 50-year-old man and his knees are bad. So stop making him fall on the ground, you know.
So the actor might pull you aside in the break and say, could you just...
Right, or if they, you know, are finding a costume isn't fitting right or stuff like that. Anything, I feel like... You know, I'm there to take care of the actors as much as I can. And so I always want them to know that they can come to me with any problems.
Which just reminds me, at the Non-Equity Jeffs Awards this last spring, Erica was mentioned by two of the actors who got Jeffs. And I thought, this podcast was already on my screen, and I thought, wow, that's really interesting, because there are no awards for stage managers. You're just so behind the scenes. But obviously, to the actors especially, it sounds like you can be really crucial to their experience of the show. So are you? Do you feel like you're advocates for the actors? Are you kind of on their side?
You're on the side, for me, you're on the side of the highest standards.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because yeah. you can't be on the side of an actor because often they're wrong in the sense of sometimes the play gets a little off track in the running or they start goofing around. Well, you're not on their side for that.
Mm-hmm.
You're really on the side of committed to really high standards. But there a lot of the diplomacy is what mm-hmm. we do, like Erica said, about informing someone that it might be a touchy subject. It always goes through us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the only ones who can give notes to actors once the director is gone.
Mm-hmm.
If you're having a problem with your scene partner, you'd come to me and I would go to your scene partner. It's forbidden, or it's a terribly bad protocol to mm-hmm. for one actor to give notes to another.
So when you say the director's gone, you mean after rehearsal and opening
shows
and now
open.
The director's
mm-hmm.
gone
yeah,
off to the next open. Show and you guys are running it.
We are in charge, yeah.
So in that sense, then you're a proxy for the director.
Yes.
Very much.
So it's interesting because it sounds like your role is... We were talking before the show about Slings and Arrows, which is that wonderful Canadian television series of backstage stories. And one thing that came out of it from it for me is this notion that essentially there's... almost like an employee management split between actors and the director. Does that ring true to you? Someone was talking about, well, you're management talking to the director. Do you agree with that or no? Everybody's looking confounded.
I think we're always on the fence between the two.
Yeah.
Because we work for the theater, they pay us, they sign our paycheck,
mm-hmm.
but we're still in the Actors' Equity Union. So we
right.
we are always between the two, and that's I think why we kind of try to commit to
yeah.
high standards so that
uh-huh.
we can say
how you sort not, out where your loyalty
right, that's
belongs.
Not really an issue. Yeah. It is really
right.
about this, but
right.
it can often be a tug of war.
Mm-hmm. Is budgeting at all on your screen? Is that something that you have to worry about at all?
Not at all. It's mm-hmm. great.
Yeah, not usually. It's
I mean, we're non-equity, so I do know more about, and I work at Lifeline during the day as
mm-hmm.
well. So I just.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
of that part of my job, I know about the budgeting, so mm-hmm. I always have it in the back of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, a show many years ago, the director, the set was done, it was up, it was finished, and the director said, "Oh, the floor has to be, it has to be the map. The map has to be the floor."
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, "We can't afford that."
Right, right. Too
you
late.
Know?
Sorry.
So, I mean,
yeah.
and the fact that the set was already done, so it was
right.
it was way too late.
Right.
What's nice about
so,
not having
yeah.
to deal with budgets is that when the director turns to you and says, "I think we should have a full-grown elephant on stage," all you have to do is write that down
right.
and send it off. It's not up to you, the stage manager, to go, "Are you? Do you know what that
right.
would cost?"
Right.
That's not because that
right.
that's not a part appropriate discussion in a rehearsal room.
Right.
Your job is to say, you know, Indian or African elephant, and,
uh-huh,
you know,
uh-huh.
send that note along and let other people have that discussion,
right.
probably loudly.
Uh-huh. Or a very short.
Or yes. very short,
no.
right.
yeah. Well, it sounds to me like another important aspect then of your job is somehow to be part of creating the atmosphere in which creativity can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Just that was implicit yes. in what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
So can any of you talk about, like, a choice that you would make based on how not to disrupt the creative process or how to foster the creative process?
Yeah.
Like you just said, David, you know, I don't say, you don't look at the guy like he's insane. You just say, yes, this is yes right now.
My thing is, because it's really easy to do and it's simple, but is my thing is that everything has to be spotless. I think it's very hard for people to be creative in a dirty environment. I mean, a lot of times we rehearse in rented spaces, mm-hmm. basements, church basements, and for me it has to be spotless and, mm-hmm. and coffee's there and provided for and that sort of thing so that those things aren't worried about. I think that's helped a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really easy to do and something you can always commit to.
Right, very concrete
yeah.
thing you can do
mm-hmm.
to help. So be a good host.
That each day, yeah, that each day the props are always in perfect order and it's mm-hmm. always clean and
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing.
Do you have an additional answer to that, Padia?
Well, I was thinking about, because I agree, I think that having the room and one thing that I always learned is that when the actors or the director or anyone comes in, I like to be there at my
mm-hmm.
desk to greet them and say, hello, good morning, good afternoon,
mm-hmm.
start them off on the right foot.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing I was thinking about is just in general, through the scope of the day, and a specific example is that equity requires us to take breaks every certain amount of time. So, and you have your choice. You can either take a 5-minute break after 55 minutes, or if you feel like And this is the judgment of the stage manager sometimes, and sometimes the director will say, hey, let's take a five. Can we at this point? But If you see that, oh, they're really in the middle of the scene, I'm not going to interrupt them to say, hey, we should take a five. Mm-hmm. You can take a 10-minute break after an hour and 20 minutes. But even after that hour and 20 minutes, I will try to communicate with the director in, like, I just, like, try to get eye language with him and say, hey, it's time for a break, but I'm not going to stand up
mm-hmm.
in the middle of the entire scene mm-hmm. while they're doing it, maybe mm-hmm. a sensitive scene or a difficult scene, because right. then people are just torn out of it versus saying, okay, that was great, let's
bring it down yeah. gently.
And even if it takes another 2 or 3 or 5 minutes, as stage managers, we try to keep on time, and that's part of our job as well, but sometimes you have to see what's going on and
be sensitive
to what's going on in the room.
Well, so are you, what's your obligation with respect, put it this way, suppose that a director is just being oblivious to equity requirements, for instance.
Or hostile to them.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Or outrightly hostile, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then what is your role and how do you handle that?
I think that's an off-site meeting mm-hmm. because you... Fines will become incurred. Casts will call the union's offices, and then the theater is the one who pays the price for that mm-hmm. if it's an outside director.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really up to you to put your foot down and say, mm-hmm. this is how it's run here, and you have to conform to that. And the rules, I think, are very, very reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
So
would you ever, if a director is just going, and you keep going, mm-hmm. stop, yeah. and they're not paying attention, would you just stand up and say, look, we really have to take a break now?
If it got too far, I would. Because uh-huh. sometimes I will stand up and not say anything. I'll just stand
right.
up.
Mm-hmm.
And that action
mm-hmm.
is...
Give them the hook.
Yeah,
that's
gives
a,
them...
That's a real
the actors
signal.
Also sees
uh-huh.
you, so
yeah.
it's so
and they're standing
it's
there cross-legged
focused.
Going, please.
Right, yeah.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so,
yeah.
so there's that. And if that didn't work, then yes, you would say, I personally would... stand up and put my hand on the director's shoulder if they were close to me, or walk up to them and say, you know what, we really do need to take a break and,
right.
and go from
and
there.
And they never slug you?
Nah, it's never happened to
not
me.
Yet.
yeah.
Not yet. So, Erica, you don't have the equity roles to deal with.
We don't.
So, but do you have any similar role in a non-equity
theater? I mean, you know,
theater?
We typically rehearse for 3 hours in the evenings, and we take a 15-minute break about halfway through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not even entirely sure what all of the actual equity rules mm-hmm. are, but it seems like we tend to break and take lunches and dinners and things like that on the same schedule as equity.
Because mm-hmm. it's essentially a natural, reasonable
mm-hmm. right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You were not going to rehearse for 5 hours and not let somebody have a drink of water, you know, things
right.
like that.
All right, so we're leaping ahead now. We've done pre-production and rehearsal, and now we're running the show, and this is where, as I say, I was completely ignorant of the breadth of the stage manager's role. So maybe, Erica, you could just take us through what running the show means?
Well, you know, making sure everything is, for me, again, we're non-equity, so it's me and one other guy who's mm-hmm. putting up our set, setting our props, you know, making sure everything is ready on the stage, making sure all the actors, you know, have all the stuff they need, a costume's not missing, things like that, and then calling the show. So
what's calling the show? You're sitting in a booth, you have a headset on, right?
As the script is going along, then you see that you have a standby,
uh-huh.
and you say
yeah.
standby sound 15, and he responds standing by, and then
so you're whispering though.
And your headset does, yeah, so you uh-huh. have to be very loud,
mm-hmm.
and then you know, it's as you get closer, sound 15, go, and it's your consistency that is
yeah.
very required.
So your map is the script. You're following
mm-hmm.
along, and you're. Now, what happens if an actor gets clearly off during a performance? Do you have a role there? Is there something you can do?
Well,
you just
have
watch
to stay on top
your toes.
Of it. Yeah,
yeah.
You have
yeah.
to, because sometimes if they skip a chunk and they skipped a chunk where there were 3 cues,
mm-hmm.
you have to. They're not going to go back unless mm-hmm. they do, which mm-hmm. then you've got bigger problems. But so you see, oh, they skipped a part. They're over here now. Then we need to leap ahead by 3 cues,
mm-hmm.
and so you tell the light board operator or the sound operator, okay, our next cue is going to be this one. So we need to skip these
mm-hmm.
ones and move on to this next one.
And what do you do if you say? What was the word you use for when a cue is coming up and you
stand by.
Mm-hmm. So what if you say stand by and there's dead silence, suggesting that someone is on another world or disappeared or
you
had a heart
it
attack?
Louder.
Yeah.
Sound standing
or you
by.
Say hello.
Yeah.
Hello there.
Yes.
And does it ever happen? Has it ever happened to you that the operator has?
I think my worst thing. Headsets are a rather unreliable
mm-hmm.
science,
mm-hmm.
and they sometimes just go out, especially wireless ones. Battery packs will fail, and there's
yeah.
your silence. You'd think, I hope they know what to do because we're going,
right.
you know, and
And you've lost communication.
Yeah, you've lost communication, and their job is to push that actor on stage. I hope they've been paying attention.
Right. So you're cueing what? You're cueing sound? You're cueing light? Mm-hmm. Is there anything else?
Scene changes.
ASMs who give actors cues, cue lights.
What's ASM?
My assistant stage manager.
Uh-huh.
So if you're saying, stand by Kevin Goodall, or mm-hmm. and then they send him out on my cue because that's the very beginning of the show. Mm-hmm. So that sort of thing.
Well, going back to your role as kind of liaison to the actors, what happens if there are real, and I know this does happen, real conflicts on during a rehearsal? Say, two actors are just really mad at each other or something. Do you have a role in that, or is that the director's job?
While the director's there, we can bring it to their attention, but mm-hmm. I think while the director's there, it's theirs to solve.
Mm-hmm. But if an actor comes to you mm-hmm. as the stage manager and they say, look, this is really problematic, I'm having a difficult thing, then you would have a conference with the director and say, look, this is going on mm-hmm. and we should deal about this and this is what this person is saying or feeling. Mm-hmm. And then you would expect them to sort of deal with it as the director of that. But if it was after opening during the run of the show and they came mm-hmm. to you, then you would absolutely deal with it.
And
whether it's about the show or about personality conflicts, because that's the other thing.
Uh-huh.
One thing could be the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you have to, if it's about the show, then you have, it can be easier because that is your job. Your job mm-hmm. is to maintain the show. Where if it's personal, then you still have to deal with it because you don't want these people to be fighting and you want a good environment, working environment. But you don't want to get into their personal life too much because it's not your job to say, well, you should be doing this and you should be more like this.
Although the line between personal and artistic is mm-hmm. pretty vague.
It's very...
If people do have a personal conflict outside of the show, mm-hmm. the risk is that will bleed into uh-huh. the show.
Right.
And so even, if it is personal, you do have to somehow... handle it so
try
that
it
doesn't bleed into
affect,
the show.
Yeah. Are there any stories that any of you can tell without using names?
Well, I had two actors who, and here's the odd thing about theater that a lot of people don't know. Actors who have to play lovers often don't get along at all.
Hmm.
Oddly enough, Romeo and Juliet, they often don't get along at all. And I don't know why, but and I had two actors, and they were older actors, and they were playing lovers, and they did not get along at all. And there was a constant going, they'd come to me, one would come to me, then the other. And when I said, the three of us need to meet and deal with this face-to-face, all that went away, apparently, because they did not want to confront the other person mm-hmm. and say, you're stealing scene focus, you're mm-hmm. stepping on my lines,
Right.
That seemed to have...
They just needed to vent to you.
Right, but they didn't really want to confront it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an odd mm-hmm. situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an interesting choice for you who are, I think some of you have been actors, is that right?
None of
the three, but before the interview started, you said that is not an uncommon path for the actor.
It was a very common path formerly. I think that this position has changed enormously over the years,
mm.
Where it used to be whoever was the worst actor, I think, got to stage manage, where now it's become a real distinct management style uh-huh. and people study it and read management journals and things like that because it is really, really management, not technical work. It's not lighting design. It's his own distinct thing.
Is there such a thing as a stage manager joke? In other words, is there some everybody knows what stage managers are that people refer to and use for humor?
There used to be this really old joke about the set designer's this kind of person, and then it goes on and on, where the stage manager's God. And that used to be the old sort of joke, because they're really sort of in charge of sort of all, the stage manager really touches every aspect, where really a lot of times costume designer won't have any relationship with the house manager.
Mm-hmm.
They just won't. We have relationship
with
every...
You're the mediator from everybody.
Every single person.
The center of the web.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was that joke, but...
Well, in terms of personality type, I guess that's what I'm trying to get at again, is organized, we know. You have to be organized.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the main...
The joke about me is that I'm pretty fastidious, that I like things a certain way, and I don't feel that I'm ready to move forward until things are a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know...
On the Myers-Briggs, I bet you guys are very different from most of the actors in the room.
Yeah, I think so. Because when you see a very fastidious actor, it's kind of a surprise.
Right.
Yeah.
But, different quality. Well, I thought of something when you were talking, David, about just even something as simple as keeping the environment clean. My husband is a playwright, and he talks about how to be creative, he needs a really firm structure around him.
Yes.
He needs routine and schedule, and he can't have chaos around him because there's something so chaotic about the artistic process.
That's right, yeah.
So it struck me as you were talking about that your job is creating that structure within which the chaos of
creativity
happens.
Right, which they can play, like and you wouldn't allow a children's room, a group of children to be playing in a sort of area of disarray.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it sort of works along those same lines, that for them to be free, the structure needs to be very solid.
Yeah.
And the atmosphere that you create as well. I mean, you want it to be clean and nice and in order, but the atmosphere that you create, that the stage manager creates, is also very important in the room.
Or conversely, because the room is destroyed at the end of every rehearsal.
Destroyed.
Yes. But you have to be the person who cares about that the least.
Right. You have to make the order
saying,
and then not care when
the order
they...
is not the issue here. That's not important. It just, they should come in, it looks great, but you don't want to be one of those, put that back. You
know? I was just thinking that you have to both create that order but not be stifling.
Exactly.
By trying to maintain
it.
Yes. So that's a very interesting balance you have to maintain. Well, let's not quite leave yet the issue of kind of the personality management, because it's, to me, a very interesting choice to be someone who is not an artist, who chooses to live in the world of artistic temperament.
Mm-hmm.
So what does attract you to that?
I'm very, very organized.
Yeah.
I can look into a room that's disorganized and know exactly what should be done immediately. But I think what draws me to it is that I think artists deserve to be supported because of what they do. I'm not artistic and I'm not creative really, but I find supporting people who are very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Have you always loved the theater? Is that, how did you get into this?
Yeah, high school, then I studied it in college and got my degree in stage management, but I think it wasn't just specifically actors, but creative people in general, because we have musicians in our show right now, and those people who have, and they take all the heat. They take all the chances, and I think, so I feel really committed to serving that segment of the artistic community by making their experience great.
Patty, do you have more to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. The organization is definitely, you need to be organized to be a stage manager, and that happens to be my personality, and that works.
Mm-hmm.
I also like being involved with a production from even before, sometimes even before the actors are cast.
Mm-hmm.
So you're seeing all of the elements come together. People go to the theater and they watch a show and they have no idea what goes on.
Right.
What it came into to put together is huge in the amount of people that it took. And so being part of that and facilitating a lot of that is really rewarding. And when you see the final product and when you're up in the booth and you're calling the show and you see what has been made, and every night you see what is continued to be made,
and
is rewarding.
And how it influences and changes people's lives.
Yeah, the audience, how they're affected.
And I'm just amazed that really it's the script. You get your script, and it's really ink on paper. And then turning it into a three-dimensional flesh and blood thing is an astounding process to be a part of.
Yeah. Well, I guess, though, I want to stick with this for one more minute, because organized people who are good managers are in great demand all around the world for all kinds of jobs. And you could, I imagine, take those skills and be paid a lot more, say, in business, because you're someone who can run things and keep things on track. So what leads you to take those gifts and skills and put them into this particular milieu? It's an interesting choice.
Well, I mean, I want to be entertained every night, you know?
Right.
It's I just like watching what we do from, page to stage and seeing the actor come up with their character in the night that it all clicks, it's like, oh man, that's so cool.
Yeah.
And, it's just totally amazing and fun to watch,
Did you, because I was, my reason for being in this is the same as yours, is that, and with all due respect for all the other professions, theater people are more fun than everybody else.
It's true.
They're just more interesting than everybody else.
It's
and
true.
It sounds terrible, but.
No, it sounds
it's small,
true.
And what I like about it is it's a small world, and it's a great community, too. It's people watch out for each other, and they're fun, and being in the arts is, you feel like, thing I love too is that you go to work and you love what you're doing in the
right.
process, and
Absolutely.
It's not just a mindless typing mm-hmm. job or
yeah.
a computer job. And
there's a glamour to the theater,
yeah,
an excitement.
And it's live,
yeah.
and you do a show, and every night is different.
Right, mm-hmm.
and then it changes after 3 months or 4 months, however long your show runs, and then you do another show with a whole different group of people, mm-hmm. or maybe some of the same people.
The variety is a big draw.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Great it is experience. Great to talk to people who have been doing the same thing for 20 years and still are very enthusiastic about it.
I love going to work, yeah.
yeah.
I'm very lucky.
Great. Well, I think I learned a lot about something I knew almost nothing about, and I am so grateful to you for coming and talking to me about it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank
yes,
you.
This has been very interesting.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of July 20th, 2009. Profiles Theater has announced their 2009-2010 season. Profiles, which is one of Chicago's longest-running ensemble theaters, is presenting its 21st season of new and challenging works, beginning with an extended run of the hit production of Graceland by Ellen Ferry. The production will now be running through September 13th. The season also includes the Midwest premiere of the brutal reality play The Mercy Seat by Neil LaBute. That show can be seen starting on October 1st. Also, the Midwest premiere of Body Awareness by Annie Baker. This is marking only the second production of this acclaimed new play since its world premiere at the Atlantic Theater Company this past season. Body Awareness by Annie Baker can be seen starting next year on April 29th. And also in the season is the Tracy Letts modern classic, Killer Joe. This one will be directed by Steppenwolf Ensemble member Rick Snyder and can be seen starting on January 14th of 2010. Profiles has also renovated its theater space for the 21st season by installing two new spacious restrooms. The theater seats have also been improved, and other technical upgrades should improve the sets as well. This has all been made possible by a generous grant from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. And for more information on Profiles 21st season, click on over to theaterinchicago.com. Benno Nelson brings us another article in the Full Storefrontal series. This one focuses on one of Chicago's best new theater companies, Route 66 Theater Company. It's an article with artistic director Steph Tovar about the upcoming musical, High Fidelity, and it's going to be a good one. Be sure to check it out on Theater in Chicago News. The hit musical The Color Purple, which will be coming back to Chicago at the Ari Crown Theater starting on September 2nd, will be here only 1 week instead of two. The decision is said to be for star former American Idol Fantasia to have the opportunity to play a week near her hometown in Greensboro, North Carolina. If you had a ticket for the second week of the run, that was the week starting on the 8th, you can get in touch with the box office to receive either an earlier night of the production or a full refund of the price. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank our guests for giving us the honor of interviewing them this week. I would also like to thank Ann Nicholson Weber and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And I would also like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.